This is Susan D. Buck, Telluride Inside and Out. Scott Blossom is a renowned yoga instructor and a licensed practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine. He is also an Ayurveda consultant who is determined to find ways to communicate about the wellness practice free of jargon and ancient beliefs, instead emphasizing actionable concepts and practices to make Ayurveda available to a results-oriented American audience. Scott does that by boiling down this rich and complex traditional medical system into simple-to-follow diet and lifestyle principles. The Hatha yoga system he teaches, known as shadow yoga, helps free the body of energetic obstructions and ignite your inner fire for healing and meditation. At the 12th annual Telluride Yoga Festival, Scott is leading classes on aging and memory, cannabis in the brain, and shadow yoga. Scott, thanks for taking time out of your schedule to join me.
Thank you, Susan. It's great to be here.
It's great to talk to you again after all these years.
So,
as a young man, you earned a degree in biology, but then what inspired you to move from hard Western science to Oriental medicine? Did you grow up in a family of healers?
Answering the last question first, I did not grow up in a family of healers. But my father passed away when I was in my early teens, and I do think that that had some gigantic impact on my motivation to try to help people who were sick. And so when I got into college, I was interested in biology, and I still remember the moment I was in a medical anthropology class studying cross-cultural models of health and healing. And I had already started to meditate and practice yoga. And then it really clicked that, medicine that was based on principles that extended into longevity and spiritual systems like yoga or Taoism would be really, really interesting to study. And so that was, that was really the shift for me. And it was also right when Deepak Chopra's books were just coming out and becoming popularized. It was like the early 90s. And so I was aware that integrative medicine was the wave to come, you know, that there was going to be some kind of, return to recognizing the power of food and the power of the mind and these kinds of things in the context of healing, and really was interested to be involved in that conversation of bridging conventional medical settings and policies with some of these ancient practices.
Okay. You dropped in sort of parenthetically the fact that you were already into yoga. What was your introduction to yoga?
I actually, I started it the summer before I went to my freshman year in college. And then when I got, when I graduated from high school, I kind of got depressed. I sort of had an existential crisis, and I got very, very low for an extended period of time. And when I started doing yoga, it was like a light turned on. So it was like I got hooked really directly, like from the first class. I was like, oh, I really like this. But then when I went to college, I just knew that it would really help. And there was a wonderful Iyengar teacher at UC Santa Cruz where I went to college at that time. And so I just started, I could take classes on campus and they were really fun, and the teacher was great, and it was, it was wonderful.
Okay. Thank you for that. Now, would you please talk about your special relationship with Dr. Robert Svoboda and the importance of Ayurvedic medicine in the West today? And do you draw a hard line between Western allopathic medicine and Eastern medicine, or do you see the two disciplines as complementary?
Yeah, well, I think that it's, again, I'll start from the second question first and just say, yes, absolutely. That's been sort of what has been inspiring for me right from the get-go, is to see how, learn how, and contribute to the way that conventional Western medicine and Eastern medicine are complementary. And one of the things, for example, in the modern context that has, you know, risen to prominence in the last several years is functional medicine. And I think it's a really great example of where there is starting to be a really fluent kind of in exchange between some of those, what you could call ancient principles, and then the modern science-based approaches that include diagnostics, supplements, drugs, and how really the best medicine is going to be incorporating all of those things. And I find, you know, I've been in the clinic now for 20 years, and I find that, you know, my appreciation of that only grows. And so that, and then, you know, this, and then the first part of your question was, you know, my relationship with Dr. Svoboda actually started in 2000. It was interesting because when I went to, it was actually in that medical anthropology class I referenced earlier, I needed to write a term paper, and I found out that a doctor named Dr. Vasant Ladd was going to be teaching at the Mount Madonna Center near UC Santa Cruz on Ayurveda. And again, I had been exposed to Deepak Chopra's books, and so I decided to write my paper on Ayurveda. And I went and studied with him, and if you've ever encountered Dr. Ladd, he's not only a great teacher, he's a very special being. And it was so impressive that I knew I was going to go on with it. But I also was so interested in integrative medicine, and I was only 20 years old at the time, basically. I thought, well, traditional Chinese medicine is much more well integrated into conventional medicine, so I might as well study that first, get a license, get a degree in that, and then return to Ayurveda. And this is what kind of, so during my years in Chinese medical school, I was sort of doing that, but reading Dr. Svoboda's books on the side, and then by the grace of the universe, I encountered him in 2000, and we hit it off, and we became friends, and then, you know, I was, of course, studying with him, but I also started to do events with him and teach with him, and that's, you know, continued to this day. We just did an event last month in Berkeley, California, and that's been, you know, one of the most significant mentorships of my life.
Thank you for that answer. Now let's start segueing into the yoga festival and yoga in general. How do you define yoga, and what exactly is the lineage you teach and practice, shadow yoga?
Yeah, that's such a big question, and at the same time, there's lots of really beautiful pith answers in the tradition of yoga, like, you know, the Bhagavad Gita itself, which is is arguably the most read spiritual book in the world, has four distinct definitions of yoga. But at this point, I really love a definition that I actually heard first from Desikachar, which is that yoga is relationship. And so it would include, of course, all of the relative relationships of relationship to your own body, relationship to your thoughts and feelings, you know, the mental and sort of psycho-emotional content, but also relationships to others, relationships to the relationship to death, limitation, suffering, the relationship to what is beyond the relative level. And so in a kind of strict sense, I would say that, you know, the practices of yoga are all technology to open up that recognition of where your limited self ends and this bigger sense of self that is revealed by acknowledging the sort of holographic and sort of interdependent nature of relationship to everything begins. And that living in both of those places, I heard a really funny little podcast from Alan Watts the other day, the Zen teacher, and his great highbrow English accent, where he said, if you're aware of, you know, your relative and your ultimate nature, you're a really swinging guy. That was how he put it. And I think that's good. That was a very nice way to put it.
And shadow yoga.
Yeah, so shadow yoga is a hatha yoga system. And it's it draws a lot from South Indian influences that in, that not only include yogic influences, but also include some of the martial art traditions from South India, as well as the dance traditions. And those things down in southern India are not really separated, especially in the preliminary foundational practices. So it has a strong influence from there, but fundamentally we use all the same things that any Hatha Yoga system would use, including mudras and pranayama and inversions and, you know, meditations and those kind of things.
Thank you. So yeah. Now really getting specific about Yoga Fest, you were the very first instructor hired by the founder of that festival. You were kind of the bellwether. Since then, you've taught sporadically in Telluride over the years, so welcome back. Would you talk about the different classes you're teaching over Yoga Festival weekend and the introduction of Ayurveda into the mix?
Sure, yeah. This is I was the first teacher that Aubrey Hackman called to come to that first year, and now it's the 12th year, and it's so beautiful to see the way that it's grown and matured and grounded there in Telluride. And so, I was actually teaching Ayurveda right from the get-go. Even the very first year, there was some inclusion of Ayurveda, and that was very popular that first year, I remember, too. And so I'm going to be, I'm now almost 50. I'm 49. I'm going to be 50 in 6 months. And so one of the insights that I've had over this time, and especially doctoring and watching the rise of technology to help people live longer lives, is that brain health is probably going to be paramount, you know, because you can even replace a heart at this point, but we haven't figured out how to replace a brain. And so keeping the brain healthy is going to be of paramount importance for living well and not simply living long. And the Ayurvedic, Ayurveda is very, very steeped in a perspective and an orientation to promoting longevity. And so a lot of it is naturally beneficial to the brain. And so one of the classes that I'm doing is on memory and aging. And that's sort of a very direct way to look at the process of, you know, some of the changes that become important to pay attention to as we age, but more importantly, the way that Ayurveda offers just a treasure chest of possibilities for approaching, you know, keeping your cognitive health really strong and your brain health strong. And then the other class that I'm doing that has an Ayurvedic component to it is this class on cannabis. And that's partly because as a doctor, especially being in California, I've had to reckon with the fact that a lot of my patients are using marijuana regularly and that it has powerful effects. It'll actually change the influence of certain herbs that you're trying to give somebody to, you know, benefit them. And so over the years, I've had to really understand it from a more nuanced perspective. And I think that that's, you know, the intention with that is partly because it is a psychoactive plant, and also that a lot of people are using it recreationally now, that to discuss it in terms that yogis can understand, meaning talk about, you know, the effects on not only the physical body, but also the energetics of the body, those kind of things can really help people to understand how to be in the best possible relationship to it, which could include abstinence, or it might include some kind of modification of the way that they're, you know, that they're consuming it, if they are consuming it. And so I feel like, generally speaking, Ayurveda really rounds out the picture for yogis so that they can get into the nitty-gritty of their physical health, because Ayurveda really has that as an emphasis. And it's kind of like a forest without end, in the sense that, you know, there's no end to the different topics about physical health. And Ayurveda is really, really focused on that, whereas yoga is in some ways supported by Ayurveda as its foundation. And that was really, like, Dr. Svoboda, his mentor, that was his perspective. So I hold that view as well.
just stretching that question a little bit further. If I attend your class, or whoever attends your class, leaves with that, you know, gets that sort of download, but lives in a place where there is no Ayurvedic support, will the lessons you're teaching still be actionable?
The simple answer is yes, and the good news is nowadays there's a lot of really wonderful, very well-written, distilled, understandable information online. But I think you hit it on the head, which is just that there's knowing what to do, and there's being able to do it, and there's and that bridging those two things is not as it's not as easy as it might seem, especially when you're talking about things that are considered to be simple, like, you know, simple dietary changes or behavioral changes. And so the answer is yes, because that's what I'm passionate about, is helping people find the space between knowing what to do and actually being able to do it.
Great. Thank you for that answer. A final question. What are your key projects today outside of teaching in the Bay Area with your wife, Chandra Easton? What are you working on?
So generally speaking, we're besides teaching, I have a clinic in Berkeley, and so that's still a focus. And but I'm also, Dr. Sobota and I are actually working on a project right now to produce a book that would be oriented around, again, something where the practices of Ayurveda, the foundational practices of Ayurveda, are not only being sort of expressed, but they're actually being updated for modern circumstances, because there's a lot in the basic lifestyle and dietary principles of Ayurveda that are, you know, dead on in terms of their usefulness. But then there's a lot of new factors that challenge our health in the modern world. And so we're sort of turning our eye to including, you know, the foundational Ayurveda that you can find in many places, but also specifically tailoring it to some of the questions that are were not around in those days. Like, for example, pesticides, plastics, different kind of technology, these kind of things that people are having to encounter. And so I'm really excited about that project because, for example, modern health research is reporting that approximately 70% of chronic disease is based on lifestyle and diet choices. And so you can, with these simple methods, actually build an incredibly strong foundation of prevention in your life. And simultaneously, those practices that are simple are often low or no cost. So what I'm really dreaming of is actually having these kind of things benefit not only the already identified, self-identified proactive yogis and Ayurvedic enthusiasts, but also having it find its way into more underserved communities and impoverished communities.
Thank you for that, and amen. This has been Susan Vibrock speaking with Scott Blossom. Look for him at the upcoming Telluride Yoga Festival. Scott, thanks again so much for your time and for your wisdom.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I can't wait to see you and be back in Telluride.